Today, we're joined by the brilliant Michelle Pugh Parry de Klerk, founder of the Women's Chapter, the UK's first network for women in business to achieve B Corp certification. Michelle's journey is an extraordinary example of how a passion project started on a shoestring. Since launching in 2014, the Women's Chapter has reached more than 30,000 women through events, thought leadership, membership, and pro bono initiatives. Keep listening as to why a portfolio career is nothing to be ashamed of. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining How to Start Up today. We're going to be talking all things portfolio careers. So it'd be wonderful if you could kick off with a bit about yourself, the businesses that you've run, and a bit about your background.
Thank you so much, Juliet. I'm really honoured to be here. And great that I get to talk about portfolio careers because, caveat or I guess disclaimer, this is something that for a really long time I felt very ashamed of. I thought it meant that I didn't know what I wanted to do. And further down the line, I've come to realize that actually everything that I have done in my very non-linear career has afforded me the skills that I have needed and I guess continue to build on to run the businesses and do the things that I love and drive impact in the way that I do. So thank you very much. But by way of introduction, I am the founder of the Women's Chapter, which is a B Corp certified movement and community for women in business, both professionals and entrepreneurs. I believe in the power of bringing together women from cross sectors to collaborate, troubleshoot, support one another. So we are a non-transactional community first, which is really important. But I have had many past lives, and many of them actually still can run concurrently with the Women's Chapter because it started as a passion project and then became a business. But my background is that I was supposed to be a lawyer. So I did a business law degree. And then when it came to going on and actually doing my articles, I was like, I'm not sure if I fancy that. And so I did a postgraduate in media studies and communications, and I went to work for a hard news title as an intern initially, but I think within my first 3 weeks, I had a front page spread and realized that actually I was quite good at that. Yeah. Really loved the chase, but also loved the communication side of it, the storytelling, the connection. And so unexpectedly, I went on to be a hard news journalist. We were quite a small team, which is really great when you're just starting out as a journalist because you get to get your teeth into everything. But again, I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to be a business journalist or a drama journalist or a travel journalist, but actually I got to do a bit of everything, which has stood me in really good stead for the work that I do today. So when I moved to the UK after a stint teaching English in Taiwan, which turned out to not be a viable career path for me. I'm not a very good teacher. And so I will admit that. And
it's good to know your strengths and your weaknesses.
Absolutely. Yes. I really hated it. I wasn't good at it. Great, obviously, for travel, but that was also in the midst of SARS breaking out. So I had a kind of COVID type experience, which was really interesting, obviously, many years ago. Came back to South Africa with my tail between my legs, had to ask for my job back. And then from there, got everything together to essentially move to the UK. So I came to the UK in my late 20s. I was going to be a journalist. Little did I realize that I wasn't going to be given a job. I could have an unpaid job where I could work the graveyard shift at broadsheets, but I wasn't going to get a paid journalism job because I had no UK experience, understandably so. And so I then landed up working in financial services, first as a PA. And then I worked my way into the marketing department. And actually, the company that I worked for was owned by a holding company that also owned Businessweek. So my plan was, I'll get a job there, I'll make some connections, and then I'll work for Businessweek. But actually, what happened was I landed up working for one of their other titles in commodities. So I spent 5 years working in commodities, pricing copper and aluminium, writing market commentary, essentially. Again, really interesting. Lots of chat, lots of human connection. I absolutely loved it, but I realized that I either needed to go on and trade and make more money, or I needed to do something completely different. And I took an unpaid internship at the Telegraph. So I had a friend who had a friend, and she said, oh, I've got a connection on the personal finance desk. And actually, they're looking for an intern for a couple of weeks. And I was like, you know, I've got some holiday to take. I'll do that. And that's actually how I got my in with newspapers in the UK, because I went and pitched a travel story to the travel editor at the time while I was there. I was like, right, I'm in the door, I'm on the floor, I'm going to go and pitch. And also the personal finance editor for Your Money realized that I could write. So I opened Post for a couple of days and then he gave me some things to write. And so I carried on writing for them and I carried on doing travel stuff. But then it was from there that I moved into luxury marketing because on the back of a piece I had written that included a hotel group that I knew from back home who had a London office, they invited me in and to say thank you for their 3-page spread in Telegraph. And I left with a job offer to be their marketing director.
So there was curiosity there. You were tempted to try new things and putting your hat into the ring and that kind of leapfrogging. You weren't giving up on things, but you were teeing things up for the future. But for you, I want to go back to that thing that you said about feeling embarrassed. There was a shame attached to not really knowing what you wanted to do because I am exactly the same. Why do you feel there's a shame attached to it?
I think it goes back to that fear of it appearing that you don't know what you want to do or that you can't stick with something.
Yeah, the commitment, you're not focused. But also you make your life harder for yourself. I know I'm a jack of all trades and a master of a few as well, but I'm making my career harder for myself by not sticking to one lane in one sector and one trade. Do you feel the same?
I might have in the past, but actually I love embracing now this knowledge that we're not one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. As human beings, we are multifaceted. And so why should we pick one career path? Why should we be defined as one thing?
It also gets boring. You see the same job for 20 years. You're going to burn out, get bored, or want to do something else.
Totally. And I think for me, and I don't know really when it happened, but there was this sense of giving myself permission to really embrace this constellation style of how I work, how my brain works, how I connect people. And that's mm-hmm. one of my superpowers, actually. And I wish I had known that when I was younger. But I think, obviously, I'm 48. With your age comes confidence and you get more and more comfortable with what you're good at. And then you outsource the things that you're not. Mm. And for me, that calm confidence and peace around my portfolio career, I think probably only came when I turned 40 because I stopped caring so much. And I don't have a CV, but I think one of the challenges is if you try to put all of that onto a CV, it would be really awkward and you'd be like, wow.
Well, also people don't want to understand it either. They don't want to believe that you can actually achieve all of that. And I've sort of been accused. It's like, well, what do you mean press in New York, Sydney and London? You can't have. I was like, well, I lived in all three places. Like, but on your own, it's like, yes, but people don't like the challenge of believing that you're capable of doing all of those things and doing them well. Mm. But what you said, your superpower, that connection, I really love you saying that because I'm doing a course this year on purpose because I thought if I'm going to work this hard, I want to make sure I'm doing the right work in the right place. And I think I've untapped that kind of dot connecting thing of, oh, that person's got that problem. I think that person can over there help them. If you're across multiple sectors and multiple industries and with multiple jobs, you've got that network that can help and connect really beautifully. There's nothing more I love than doing that kind of jigsaw puzzle of people. Is that the similar thing for you?
Absolutely. I get such a buzz when those light bulbs go off.
Yeah.
And I realize that not everybody can do that. Like, I really thought everybody could, but it is something that not everybody can tap into. Oh, I remembered so-and-so said they needed help here. Or when I curate an event or a gathering for the Women's Chapter now, people always leave having met someone they felt they were meant to meet.
Was this realization what led you to create the Women's Chapter?
In part, I was running a lot of private client events through my luxury hospitality work, collaborating with luxury brands, and that kind of collaboration community piece was really important. And as part of these private client events that I ran, there were a lot of women that were coming to them. And I was standing and watching how they were connecting. Those sparks were flying and they didn't know each other. And London is quite a small place. But when you mix the sectors and industries, it's not really. And in those days, LinkedIn was just really gaining traction. People weren't as accessible as they are now. And so I loved seeing these sparks, collaboration, people saying, oh, let's go and have a coffee. And then from there, they were investing in each other's businesses or becoming non-exec directors for one another, or just forging friendships. And I really get such a buzz and a reward from that. I still do. So it's a very big part of me using something that I didn't know was special, but knowing that you need to meet so-and-so because at the very least, you're going to hit it off and be amazing friends and have loads in common. But actually, in your professional careers, there may be something really magical in store.
Yeah. And you never regret a conversation. And I think it's something like 98% of the UK's economy is a small to medium enterprise, and 78% of that is service-based business. So the amount of conversations, I often look at people on public transport and think, I wonder where they work or what they do and who they've met and what conversation has given them joy that then leads to another connection. And that is how business is done. Yes, we all work on laptops, and yes, we're far too much on our screens in Excel, but it's those magical conversations that you have that lead to an idea, that create something that then gives you job satisfaction, and blah, 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 the rest is history.
You are absolutely speaking my language. Every year around International Women's Day, there are always these posts on LinkedIn about, so tired of hearing everybody talking about all the things we need to do, talk. And actually, I disagree, because conversations lead to connection. Connection leads to collaboration, and collaboration leads to change. We do need to have the conversations, make the noise, talk to each other in order to come together and have that meeting of minds where we can drive change together. So underestimating that power of a conversation and how it leads to a connection or a spark and how that fits into that change chain reaction is really important. It's so simple when you think about it.
It's everything, for sure. So if somebody's listening and they're thinking, God, I've got my day job and then I've got my side hustle and I've got this passion project and I've got this idea for something else, it can feel slightly overwhelming. What advice would you give them to manage that overwhelm?
I think it depends on overwhelm around having multiple passions and projects and getting energy from all of them and understanding how to prioritize your time. I don't think there's one solution. I do really believe in niching down. So I think you can have a portfolio career and you can do multiple things, but you do need to have hyper-focus within those channels. And also ask yourself the question whether or not, if you're struggling with this idea, do I take something that I'm really passionate about, my passion project, and turn it into a business? So side hustle to main hustle. I would encourage people to ask the question, will it erode the joy that I get from this if I make it commercial? Because something I have learned along the way is that, and in many ways it's a regret, the Women's Chapter would have been way bigger, way more impactful if I had got out of my own way much earlier on. And this obviously brings in imposter syndrome, etc. If I'd gone out of my own way and actually invested in it and believed in the power of it, because I knew it held power, but I wasn't sure anybody else would believe me. And why would they believe me? Because I've done so many things. So I do really wish that I had paid attention more, that I had drilled down into the details, that I had made it commercial sooner, because the more commercial we've become in that, the more profitable we've become as an organization, the more impact we can drive.
Well, this is it. The whole premise of B Corp, you have to be a company, not a charity, and you have to put people and planet above profit, but you have to have profit to be able to do that. But the imposter syndrome thing, how do you manage yours?
I keep a catalogue of success.
Ah.
My definition of success. So the things that I feel proud of are achievements. And I try to write them down. I have them on notes on my phone, because in times of low confidence, low energy, this time of year, everybody's
saying, yeah,
like they've just run out of steam. We need to remember how far we've come. And I think particularly women are not very good at this, because we don't stop often enough to really give ourselves credit for how far we've come, how much we've achieved, how much impact we've driven. And when you catalog those little successes, even if it's just a little bullet point or something that you feel proud of or that makes you feel great, or stick it up on your notice board in your office, it can remind you, because it's evidence-based.
It is. It's fact.
Yeah. When we're ruminating, when we feel anxious, when, you know, and particularly in midlife, so many women are dealing with the whole biological phenomenon of perimenopause and how that impacts your confidence and your body, it's really important to have evidence-based facts that you can go back to and go, okay, hang on a second. I may be feeling really awful in this moment, but look at that. Look at what I've done, what I've achieved, how capable I am.
It takes you out of yourself, doesn't it? It makes it bigger than you. And your business is bigger than you. You work for a company. It isn't you. You aren't it. You have to keep the two a little bit separate.
And the other thing around imposter syndrome, or just a tool that I use a lot to manage my confidence, my desire to over-deliver, is to focus on the things that I can control. And I have to remind myself of that often.
Yeah. Exactly. And in the last 10 years of you doing the women's chapter, you will have gone through many cycles in the country. And a lot of friends this year have said, God, business is really tough. It's worse than last year, which I didn't expect. It's like the world has fallen apart numerous times. There's nothing you can do about that. If you can keep your head above water and keep going, great. But you can't beat yourself up for things you can't control, because it's a waste of energy, and energy is everything. You need the fuel to keep going.
And I think with the women's chapter, going back to my piece on wishing that I had done something sooner, and I have to say that I was pushed to take it seriously rather than it was an actual choice that I made. So for a very long time, I was very comfortable running my passion project. And in 2019, just before everything with COVID happened, my marriage broke down very suddenly and very unexpectedly. And I found myself financially exposed completely. And I had to look at my career, my income. I had to think about, what am I going to do? I don't have contingency plans anymore. I am the plan. Mm-hmm. So I have to really think about, where do I invest my time, and how do I do something that I love, but I make sure that it can pay my bills? And just like when I started the women's chapter kind of full time, I'd been made redundant. So I got given a kick, which I think so many business owners, particularly those that start business later in life, that, you know, that's the kick they get.
Me included. You get pushed and you have no choice. Someone's like, you're very brave starting a business in lockdown. It's like, I don't have a job. There's no choice.
But actually, that's where those of us that have this entrepreneurial spirit, which is often what drives our spectrum of interests and how we get pulled into multiple projects, is because we are hardwired to see opportunity.
It makes you laser focused on profit as well, because there is no backstop. Your mortgage payments are going to continue to go out whether you like it or not, and you have no salary. You suddenly get very good on the detail of what matters and where you're going to find that revenue, which I don't think is a bad thing, because I will never treat money or experience money the same way. And I'm forever grateful for that. Doesn't matter how well the business is doing or how stable I am financially, I will always have that mindset around money, which so many, unfortunately, female founders say, oh, I can't look at the numbers. I don't understand the numbers. It's like, you have to. You're running the red light on your business if you don't get a fair with your numbers. With the women's chapter, you're celebrating 10 years this year, I believe.
11, actually. We've just hit
11. Yeah. Congratulations.
11. Thank you.
How have you managed the balance between your other roles and that role, given you're the founder of the women's chapter and you have other revenue streams in your life? Like, how do you balance that week?
I had to have honest conversations with myself about what really set my heart on fire. Which were the parts of my consultancy work that I really loved, but that I was also really good at, and then let go of certain elements of that work and keep the things that I really wanted to carry on doing. Because when you're growing a business, it can be very easy for that to be everything that you do.
Yeah.
And I've always had to have one foot in each. My consulting work and the work that I do in the travel industry is incredibly important to me. It's a very big part of my identity. And I think in some way or another, I will always work in that industry. It's the wanderlust, it's the guest experience, all of it, the storytelling, everything. I love travel, and it sets my heart on fire. So I feel very fortunate, actually, that I get to have what I do for the women's chapter, which inspires me. I mean, I'm surrounded by incredible women all the time. And I have created a community and a support network for them, but it's also that for me. And then I have the work that I do in the travel industry. And I did have to let go of some of the projects and things that I was doing that I realized this is a gut thing, right? When you take on something that isn't really aligned with your values or your purpose. And yeah, one of the biggest lessons I've learned, and actually it was told to me by Tamara Lohan from Mr. and Mrs. Smith many years ago. She said,
we're taking a quick break from this episode to ask, are you thinking of starting your own podcast? If so, this is great news because we run a course that will train you how to produce your own podcast yourself. This course is for people who do not want to outsource and pay someone else to do it. You want to learn how to do it yourself. We teach you everything that you need to get up and running with your own podcast show and so much more. Just DM us at hello@fallowfieldmason to book your spot.
You can always afford to walk away from people or projects that don't align with your values.
Because they end up costing you more money in the long run and more time and more stress and more effort. But it's so hard when you're starting a business to say no to someone that wants to give you money. I think I was second year, I remember firing a client. It's the only time I've had to do it. But the way he spoke to a colleague of mine, I was like, absolutely not. No. And he was so taken aback that I ended the contract, not him, because as a service provider, typically you're the one that gets kicked to the curb and you're the lowlier one. And we have now set up a way of onboarding clients that you come in at an equal level of respect. And if we get paid at the first of the month, not the end of the month. We ask them to fill out a questionnaire before we have a call with them. So for me, it was really shocking to have to fire a client. But I thought, I have quite literally the agency to be able to do this. And I do not regret it for a second. So what would you recommend a founder do to shore themselves up financially so they have that ability to say no?
That's a difficult question, actually, because I think with every business, it's different. But you mentioned earlier about being in your numbers. I, by nature, am not spreadsheets analytical person, but I have to force myself to do that because firstly, it helps you to focus. It helps you to really focus on if purpose is something that's really driving you in your business, it will help you to see where you can drive purpose. And so being financially savvy doesn't mean that you have to have all the answers. Ask questions. We do a lot of that within the women's chapter, really encouraging women to take control of their personal and business finances and have the difficult conversations. Make sure that you are not just signing up for things or taking on costs within your business that aren't absolutely essential. So I would say definitely really look at your numbers. Start as you mean to go on. And that's really being analytical about, right, I have this passion. I have a problem I want to solve. I know I can solve it, but who else will this solve the problem for? Who is my audience? What are my values? But then also, where am I going to make money? Because unless you are driving revenue, you cannot make as much difference as you may want to.
You don't have a business. And I think a lot of people go, oh, I just want to do this bit of the business. It's like, without cash flow, you have no company. I don't think there's any shame attached to that. People are like, oh, I'd just rather be a creative and let someone else worry about that. And then go and work for someone else. I've got in the habit now, it's almost a form of meditation. If I'm having a stressful day, I'll just look at the spreadsheet, run the numbers, and it brings my anxiety down because I'm looking at forecasting, I'm looking at month end, and it's fine. It's all fine. It's okay. And not wasting that time on worry, I think, has helped in freeing up your headspace. Do you offer within the women's chapters modules or coaching or support to members or on that, if anyone's listening?
We have a corporate partner that we're going into our fifth year with them now. And actually, this is something that's been really interesting in the evolution of the women's chapter, is that I did kiss a few corporate partner frogs before I found our existing partner, which is Rathbones. And the real point of difference in the way that they've supported our community is they didn't just come in to sell to women because women have been defined as an interesting audience to sell into. Because as we know, we hold 85% of consumer power. We make those decisions globally in our homes, in our businesses.
And we're actually recording this on Black Friday. So,
yeah. And obviously, we are very interesting from a wealth management perspective. But they started to think about, and this was something we co-created with them, how could they support our community beyond selling us products and services? How could they open up their black books of contacts to us? So, for example, one of the investment managers made a connection between one of his clients and one of our members who was looking for investment. And she secured investment for her business within 2 weeks.
My God.
It's again, it's that cross-sector power, but and bringing together professionals and entrepreneurs, but also going beyond the transaction, thinking about how can we be more financially savvy, more financially secure and future-proof both our personal and business lives by utilizing our networks and our communities, but by asking questions, asking for help. So, and with them, we do run webinars now around the budget. They had a special budget hub that was set up. People could ask questions. So we do really encourage that. Don't put your head in the sand. Ask the questions, ask for help. And actually, it's worked out to be incredibly successful, both for them, but also for us, because the confidence around financial security within our community has grown exponentially. And as a result, our businesses, because as a founder, your personal finances and your business finances are inextricably linked, especially when you're a service provider and you are your business to a certain extent. You are far more exposed. If you go down, it can often mean that your business goes down. So there are a lot more factors at play, I think, from a financial perspective that you need to think about. And certainly that was the position I found myself in December 2019, thinking, what the hell am I going to do? I've got a thriving passion project, which I've never needed to pay attention to the numbers and make sure that it made money because I didn't really have much financial responsibility. I put my share of money into the joint account every month. Mm. But then suddenly when you do have to be responsible for all of those things yourself, it forces you to grow up and pay attention really quickly. And I'm really glad that I did that because
I was going to say, it's so exciting though, once you've mastered it and the autonomy that you have, and you can be so proud of yourself for having done this. And look what you've built. Look what you've achieved for so many. And you're helping, as you mentioned, with purpose, so many other people do the same.
Yeah.
For you, looking back when you started in 2014, what do you wish you'd known or what would you have done differently? Start sooner by the sounds of things.
Start sooner and just start.
Yeah.
I would have taken myself more seriously. I would have written a proper business plan. And a business plan doesn't have to be a formal business plan, but map it out. Think about the problems you can solve, the tools you have, the skills you have, and really map it out and take it seriously and speak to other people. We spend so much time in our own heads. And that's why the community around us is so important, because if you have trusted people around you that you can be vulnerable with, that you can use as a sounding board for your ideas, you'll get to where you're going much faster, or you will also take less wrong turns.
100%. The problem shared, problem halved thing is never to be underestimated. And that's why I love co-working offices for that exact reason, because you could be sitting next to a total stranger and just say, can I just ask you a question? Or you eavesdrop a little bit on their Zoom calls and you're like, can I just have a quick chat? And you never, ever regret those conversations. As we said earlier, it's fantastic.
Mm. One of the benefits that came out of COVID, I think, and when we were all forced online, was that people became a lot more accessible. They had more time. And we were really fortunate with the Women's Chapter because, again, it was one of those things where we were given a kick to move everything online and start running online events. And I remember before we ran our first event, I was like, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a techie. I'm so glad that we did that. But when we moved our business online, and we ran 2 years of free online events where some of the most remarkable female business owners in the UK gave up their time to come on and share advice and guidance. It was a really rewarding experience for me, but I think what it demonstrated was, if you don't ask, you don't get. The worst thing that can happen if you reach out to somebody to ask them, and you do need to be respectful of their time, is that they can say no.
Yeah.
And then just ask the next person.
Yeah, you're never going to run out of people to ask.
Totally. Have a hit list of connections. Have a hit list of people that you want to know. And not necessarily because you need something from them, but because you want to be inspired. So I think in this digital era that we live in, that's why there's still so much loneliness. Because it doesn't replace in-person connections, but it has made people a lot more accessible, and it built a global community and ecosystem for both entrepreneurs and professionals. And we need to utilize that. We have to tap into it and get excited about it.
Yeah. And I think just a hack for anybody listening, the best thing is LinkedIn, because people tend to always read their inbox on LinkedIn. Whereas if you email them, it might go to spam. Instagram, they might not appreciate a business approach on a social media platform. For us, if we're looking at podcast guests, we'll always DM them on LinkedIn and we know that they'll typically get it. And also on that, I started a podcast and I wanted to talk to people and I started recording friends that gave me advice. But then I realized that if you ask someone to come on a podcast, they'll typically say yes. If you ask them for a cup of tea and can I pick your brains, they might say a bit more of a no. So something that we do is ask a question from a previous guest, which was Sif from Array. And she was the most wonderful guest last week. But her question for you was, what is the best mistake you've ever made?
Creating a community of women in business.
Yeah, now look at it.
Maybe because it's a big job. I think moderating and managing a community, we've never had any major issues, I'm very fortunate to say, but it is labor intensive. Yeah, and make sure that it's meaningful for people, because I'm very mindful that communities, the ones that are really successful, do need to be curated in terms of how you bring people together, you know, what kind of facilitator and conduit you are as the sort of lead for the community, because to a certain extent, you can just let everybody get on with it. And one of the things that I love about the work that we do at the Women's Chapter is so often I will see collaborations and projects, joint projects on Instagram where people that have come together through Women's Chapter have gone on and created that. And I think that's so magical. But if it weren't for us thinking about who our people are and curious women in business, regardless of what they do, the diversity of professions within our community is mind-blowing. We have somebody who turns over millions from running an erotic platform where all of the content is filmed ethically and everybody's paid, all the way through to obviously fashion, beauty, wellness brands. And I think that's the most exciting part of bringing together these incredible people, is realizing the extent of opportunity that exists for all of us. And that ties in with that portfolio career. You can create a business just about anything. And I think that's really exciting. We don't need to join one company and stay with them forever as our grandparents and great-grandparents might have done, or where you got a badge of honor because you got your 30-year service. Or there's so many exciting things. And I think the reason that this portfolio career concept has grown so much is economically it was needed. Mm-hmm. The barrier to entry for any career now is much lower, but it's also really exciting because it allows us as individuals, provided we believe in ourselves, to really play to our strengths and to see how we can make something we really love and we're really good at and somebody else needs, we can make it into a viable business. And from a B Corp perspective, that realization when we went through that process, because we were the first women's network in the UK, network or community, to get B Corp certification, which I had to get out of my own way when it came to that, because I was like, well, maybe we're too small, maybe we don't do enough. And actually, it was such an exciting process to go through that as a creative, I had to rein myself in. And I actually ended up working with Sid Connects, who are the consultants for the Country and Townhouse Awards. And they're Women's Chapter members. I went to them and I said,
and also being on this podcast.
Yes. And I said, you have to help me, because I'm never going to do this, because I'm so excited about all of the opportunities that exist for us in this space in terms of all the things we can do to make a difference, that I'm not actually going to be able to drill down and do the paperwork. And so very fortunately, they guided us through that process. But it was so meaningful. And I have, by accident, become a real advocate for small businesses. And I've been on panels of B Corp to talk about why, regardless of the shape or size of your business, you don't necessarily need to get a B Corp certification or any sustainability accreditation or cert, but use a framework. A lot of these tools are free and they're available for us to look at and see how we can build these layers of impact into our business, because doing something is always better than doing nothing.
So what would your question be for our next guest?
It would be to ask them if there's something surprising about them that people don't know or often get wrong.
I'm so excited to ask our next guest that question, because weirdly, in all of the episodes that we've had, we've never had the same question. So thank you so much.
If I may give another piece of advice, it's around never underestimating the power of your community. So whether or not you are looking at transitioning your passion project or side hustle into your main hustle, or you are just needing to take your existing business to the next level. If I think back on that kind of superpower that I spoke about earlier, this constellation way of thinking, is never underestimate the power of your community. Most of the time, the people you need, the advice you need, the support you need is within your existing network.
And they do want to help. And I think we're really bad at asking for help. But if you ask, if you put your hand up, people will. And that's how this whole podcast started. People found out I was starting my own business and thought, Jules, I'm going to call you. I want to help. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I was overwhelmed by it because I'd been at Chanel and big brands. I was like, I don't need help. You've got budget. We just get our head down and don't show vulnerability. And then suddenly when you start a business, you have to be so vulnerable and so at the coalface and so okay with that. And I wasn't at all. Yeah. But people just foisting advice on me is, oh, right, I'm going to have to take it. I'm going to have to do something with it. And then turned it into a podcast. And now look, it's just insane.
And also people often have a very negative experience around networking. And I would challenge listeners to think about, to reframe networking. Reframe it as connection.
Dot connecting, yeah.
As a form of self-care. Because we are hardwired to connect with each other, to surround ourselves with people that we trust. From birth, we wouldn't survive if we didn't rely on the people around us.
We belong in a tribe.
Hardwired for that. So I think my advice when people always say, I hate networking, is reframe it. Think about it as a way to really invest in yourself and build a community of people around you, no matter how small, who you can be vulnerable with and who will support you through the tough times. Because when we're disconnected, that is when burnout, lack of confidence, imposter syndrome, all of these things creep in. And I think fortunately now with the focus on health and well-being, a really key part of connection is when you feel connected, your cortisol levels lower, inflammation lowers. There isn't a biological impact that comes from connection. And as leaders and business owners, when we're calm and connected, we make better decisions, we're better leaders, and we lead from a place of this connected calm and confidence rather than from a place of fear. All of this underpins this hardwired need. When we lean into it, our need for connection, the positive effects are undeniable.
Yeah.
And so I would challenge anybody who's ever had a bad experience with networking. It was obviously just the wrong network or the wrong place. Try again, reframe it, and think about it as an act of self-care and an investment in yourself and in your business.
I love this because we decided to rerun our health and wellness season over Christmas. There's 12 days of Christmas for founders because it's such a shitty time of year because you're running a business, trying to take time off. Everyone's, you've got to rest. You've worked so hard this year. You're strung out, burnout, knackered, and it's dark and miserable and cold. So we're rerunning all of that because we know people got a lot of comfort from it and connection from it because they could listen to someone and feel supported. But I completely agree with you. Finding your tribe, your community, your network, whatever it is so crucial to survive running a business. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on How to Start Up today. You're an absolute peach of a person creating what you've done. So very big thank you for that. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I'm really grateful to have been here and I'm feeling really energized and buzzed on a Friday afternoon. So thank you very much.
If you'd like to contact Michelle, you can find all of her details in the show notes. And tune in next week to hear the founders of Maison Louis Mary on how to start a business and stay married, along with their answer to Michelle's question.